With TikTok ads, our revenue went up $10 million year over year during back-to-school season. Penn Foster is online education. TikTok is great because the reach is incredible for finding a lot of different types of audiences on the platform. Creator content at scale allowed us to easily develop and distribute creator-led ads. Our return on ad spend for TikTok is 21% higher than the next best channel.
Start growing your business today. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Ladies, and welcome back to another episode of Perspectives with Sherry. I'm your host, Sherry Ryan, and on this evening, we have an amazing guest. I am so excited to have her with us, Monica Tanner. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you. It's so fun to be here with you, Sherry.
Thank you so much. So for those of you that are new over here, Over Here is a safe space for women in midlife. We talk all things health, wealth, and empowerment, and all the wonderful things that feed those three amazing categories. And so we have been focusing lately on relationships. And we have done relationships with yourself, healthy ways for self-love and seeing yourself, relationships in dating, relationships with family. And today, y'all, we are going to focus on marriage, on, you know, whether you're in a new marriage, your second marriage, or you've been married for a few years and you're trying to figure out how to get unstuck and reconnect, we've got you. So Monica is your go-to for that. And so let me give you all a little bit of background and we're going to get right into these questions. So Monica Tanner, RLT trained relationship coach and host of the Secrets of Happily Ever After podcast, transforms marriages with simple communication, connection, conflict resolution, and commitment strategies. Her mission is to lower the divorce rate and improve marital satisfaction. That's great. Through her engaging podcast, new book, Bad Marriage Advice, vibrant social media community, and couples coaching practice, Monica's expert guidance has impacted thousands of couples by helping them ditch resentment and roommate syndrome. Wow, I like that. And get back to living their happily ever after love story. So welcome, Monica, today. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it's absolutely my pleasure.
All right. Well, we're going to get right into these interview questions. I'd like for you to tell our audience a little about your journey and what led you to become a relationship coach, especially one rooted in faith.
Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely I would think it's a God thing. I don't know. But when I was young, I used to think I was living in a fairy tale, like life was perfect and everything was great. And when I was 12 years old, my parents announced they were getting a divorce. And I remember thinking, wait a second, this is not talked about in fairy tales. And just from that very young age, I became very attuned to relationships all around me. I used to notice my friends' parents or family members. And I kind of came to this conclusion, like, couples don't seem that happy together. Like they don't seem like they're having very much fun, which was very discouraging to me. So I studied it in college. I met my Prince Charming right after graduating from the University of Texas at Austin. And we started our life together. We started having children and building a business and life got really busy really fast. And I, even though I had studied everything and I thought I knew, you know, the secrets to happily ever after, it was difficult. It was a rocky road for a while. Like we both kind of had to work out a lot of our own like personal issues and then with each other. And so I had four children, and once they all went back to school full time, I decided it was time for me to go back to school so I could get some credentials. Mm-hmm. And I realized going through my master's that the traditional marriage therapy has pretty low success rate. And so I was pretty disheartened by that. And so I thought, you know what? I don't want to do therapy. I want to do coaching. I want to work on that. The way I thought about it in my mind was that therapy was kind of working on blown engines. Like by the time a couple gets into the therapy office, like they are pretty much done and they're just trying to like check something off the list. Like they're done. And I wanted to like really work on how do we maintain like oil changes the car so that the engine doesn't blow up. And so I did that for a long time, realizing after about 5 years of doing it that really I needed the skill set to work on blown engines and oil changes, and I needed the two together. So that's when I trained to be an RLT, which stands for relational life therapy. So I went through that whole program and now I use that. Now I feel very confident that even, you know, addiction and adultery and all kinds of problems that couples face. Yeah. And I now feel equipped to talk about those things, work through those things with couples. And it's been an amazing journey. And writing the book has been so much fun. So
awesome. Awesome. I love how you talked about that, how it started, how you evolved from understanding that, you know, you wanted to be the coach, and then you wanted to also be the one that could, when it almost is at the end, be the one that had the tools to help with that. So now you can help couples on all gamuts of the relationship with their needs.
Yeah, I think which is super necessary, because couples, even the most healthy couples, go through lots of different stages in their marriage. And a lot of times, like Esther Perel says, you know, you'll have three or four marriages in your lifetime, hopefully to the same person. Yeah. But there are like lots of different things that happen in your lifespan where you know, sometimes you're working on maintenance and sometimes you're really working on that blown engine. So one of the things about relational life therapy that really appeals to me is that we give you tools, but a lot of people use it kind of as their last stop. Like you can work with an RLT therapist and really, you know, by the end of your sessions, know whether like this is something we want to work on or we're ready to part ways, with a lot of peace and knowing that, you know, you've really worked on the relationship.
Wow. Okay. I find that fascinating. All right.
Jerry Real, who is the founder of relational life therapy, he often says, you know, I help couples on the brink that nobody else has been able to help. So,
wow. Okay. Well, see, ladies, there is hope out there no matter where you are in your journey. So that is great to know. Many couples in midlife struggle with emotional disconnect. What are some common reasons this happens, and how can they begin to rebuild and rebuild that connection?
Yeah, such a great question, because I think that most of us growing up didn't see really good templates for emotional regulation and being able to really talk about our emotions. Like it just, the previous generations just didn't do that very well. And so it's not your fault. But what happens is we get into a marriage, and when we talk about emotional intimacy, it typically doesn't go very well. In fact, most couples, in fact, I can say like 99.9% of the couples that I work with, when I, you know, during the intake, when I'm like, well, you know, what can I do to help you? Most of them will say, we need help with communication. Mm-hmm. And that's typically a long-term, you know, deterioration, because they have different communication styles, they have different coping mechanisms, different way of seeing things. And when they originally got together and started to communicate about these things, when all of those hormones, you know, that are running rampant when you're first, you know, that, oh, I forgot that the term for it, but you in the first 3 years of marriage, you're still on cloud nine. But when that starts to wear off and you're having these big discussions about family and careers and goals and values and things like that, those conversations don't typically go well because people don't learn communication skills. We don't talk about them in school very often. They don't learn them at home. And so we're kind of stuck. And so you have those initial conversations that don't go very well. And then you're like, well, we just can't talk about this. And then all of those big hot button topics like marriage or like money, intimacy, kids, you know, in-laws, you've had enough conversations to know that we just don't talk about this stuff.
So in your work, how do you define emotional safety and why is it so critical to intimacy in marriage?
Yeah, well, trust and safety are two really big, important, you know, human needs, right? We want to feel like our relationship is a safe place to be who we are, to feel what we feel, to say what we need to say, and that our spouse isn't going to judge us or leave us or, you know, torment us. Yeah. And again, that it requires some skills. It requires learning how to listen. It requires empathy and compassion and vulnerability. And all of those things are difficult skills. It's like learning how to play the piano, the violin, and the flute all at once, right? And so we're not going to be good at it in the beginning, but just like anything else, you can get good at it over time if you're willing to learn the skills and practice them. And so, it's something that couples have to be willing to put some intention around and some effort behind. And so if they are, most couples will be successful, but they have to decide, like, we're going to learn how to have the relational skills to make our relationship a safe place. And the other really interesting thing is that, you know, everything in life changes. Like, we all change. And so I talk about this in my book, but one of the things that's so hard is when I have couples come into my office, they've been married 20, 30 years, and they're like, well, they've just changed so much. They're just not the same person that I married. Well, of course they're not, because their experiences in life have changed them. And so maybe they've changed in little ways, but maybe they've changed in big ways. And a lot of couples, you know, get married on certain kind of ideas or contracts or, you know, with certain values and certain ideas about how they're going to live their religion or how they're going to parent. Or, you know, I think a funny example that I always give about this is, we get a crash course. Like, we know everything before, but then once we become parents or once we become business owners, like, all of a sudden we learn all these things really quickly. And the example I always give is, I remember when my husband and I were first married and my sister-in-law, who had two kids, drove from California to where we were in Idaho. And when she got there, her car, her minivan was just like disgusting. And so me and a couple of the other sister-in-laws, we took her van to get washed. And I just remember the whole time saying, I will never let my car get this gross. Like, I mean, spilled milk and like goldfish crushed in the corners. And I was just like, how could you ever allow your car to get this dirty? Right. And then a couple kids later, I'm like, oh, I get it.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I knew so much. Like, I was the expert on everything. And then all of a sudden you have an experience and you're like, oh, I see. Yeah. Like, 15 minute drive to the store, my car can look just that bad. Right.
Exactly. Yes. I'm a mother of three.
So they're all grown. We have experiences, we change and we grow, and we wouldn't want our partners to be the same exact person as we married. But a lot of people struggle with, like, you know, well, they completely changed their religious views and that's really hard for me. And learning how to communicate about that, and that's intimacy, creating a safe space for us to talk about the things we're questioning or, you know, the things we're thinking about, learning about imperfectly, is really what that intimacy, that emotional intimacy, is built on.
Okay. Now I have a kind of like a bonus question. this is just out of curiosity. So as a relationship coach and with all of your extensive training, so when a couple comes in and you have one that is just like really wanting to fix things and do whatever they can to make it work, and then you have the other that's kind of checked out, how do you, well, I'm pretty sure you know relatively quickly if that's the case. And how do you mitigate? Can you mitigate that? How do you work towards that?
Yeah. Well, that is almost always the case. There's one partner who thinks that therapy is a really good idea, and the other partner who's just kind of dragging their feet. There are a lot of things that you can do on your own. So the way I kind of think about it is one person can spark a lot of change, but it takes two people to maintain it. Mm-hmm. And so marriage is, or any relationship for that matter, is a dynamic. So if one person changes their steps, then the other person has to respond accordingly. They may not like it, mm-hmm. but typically they do. So once you start learning relational skills, you start asking for what you want, you start finding your voice and standing up for yourself in a loving, respectful way, the other partner a lot of times will see like, oh, this is something different. And they might push back against it initially, but usually they'll be like, you know, once you start to really build those skill sets, mm-hmm. they'll be like, I like this. This feels better. And so the other partner will typically come to the table. But a lot of times what is happening between a couple isn't even happening between the adult versions of the couple. So a lot of times what I notice is that the real conflict or the real problem with the couple is when we get triggered and we're both in our adaptive child. So we're both, it's like 2 8-year-olds duking it out with no skills. Even if you've gone to a lot of therapy, you've read a lot of books and listened to a lot of podcasts, and you're like, no, I have a really great communication skills. When you get in the heat of the battle, you get triggered, and all of a sudden that 8-year-old comes out and is trying to protect you, and you can't access those skills. And so the earth skill, like the main focus of a lot of times when couples come to see me, is let's get you to be able to go from that 8-year-old triggered child who's not responding to what's in front of you. You're responding to something that happened in your past. Mm-hmm. So let's be able to breathe through that and be able to access that prefrontal cortex, that adult version of yourself. Yeah. So usually that requires taking a beat, taking a breath, taking a walk, you know, getting back into that solid, grounded self. And then you can access all of those skills that you've learned.
Okay. That is fascinating. Y'all, I'm learning a lot here too. I'm taking lots of mental notes. So, Monica, what does reigniting intimacy look like for long-term marriages where passion has faded?
It's about finding the fun again. It really is so simple. Not easy. I don't want to like make you think that it's easy, but it is really, really simple. Reigniting the passion is about showing each other that you're a priority for each other. And so I talk about a 3% rule, which is basically, there are 1,440 minutes in a day. And if you will spend 20 of those minutes, that's less than 3% of the minutes that everybody has. So time is the great equalizer, right? You can't buy more time. You can't bench press your way to more time. You can't impress anyone that is going to, you know, spot you a few more minutes. Everybody gets the same amount of minutes. It's how you use them. So if you'll spend 20 minutes talking to your partner each day, and 3 hours a week. So there's 168 hours in every single week. Nobody gets more, nobody gets less, but 3 hours on date night, reconnecting, doing something fun, like go like reignite that spark, right? Like I always think of myself, I want to be that old couple that's like swinging on the porch swing and laughing about the simplest date nights. One of my favorite date nights that my husband and I do is literally grabbing a treat and walking on our favorite greenbelt path, right? And just talking about what are we reading? What are we learning? What, you know, what's a silly thing that our kids did? Like those are the things that I'm going to remember. And then the last week, there's 365 days in a year. if we will spend at least three of those days getting away. Now, this doesn't have to be expensive, elaborate, or out of our price range. Like, we can figure out how to do a hometown date or send our kids to friends' houses and do it at home. If you can, you know, get out of your where you normally are, get to the beach, get to the mountains, get somewhere, and just spend that time on each other. So 3%, if you will spend 3% of your time together, you will be able to avoid that loss of connection, that, you know, just have fun together. Remember that life is short. Like, yeah. Eat the cake, like, right? Have some fun together.
Right. I love that. Have the fun. And then 3%, you know, it sounds low, but it's an important. And then I love how you talked about the 20 minutes a day with all the time that we had, intentional time, that 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yes. And when 20 minutes, that means don't take your phones in the room with you. Like, you know, get your kids occupied. You can either put them to bed, put them in front of a show, you know, whatever it is. But it's really good for your kids to also see that you're making your relationship a priority. So you're not doing them any harm by saying for 20 minutes, you guys can watch this show. Mom and dad are going to go in here and we're going to talk and have some mommy daddy time, right? Like, that is so good for your kids to see. The same with date night. It is so great for your kids to see you preparing for date night. They get the babysitter. My kids loved when the babysitter came over. Like, that was their favorite, right? And he gets all dressed up, and I mean, not always, but, you know, gets like, makes an effort, you know, dad comes, and, you know, we go out and we love our kids, but we also love our relationship. And it's really good to teach your kids that, you know, your relationship is a priority. So we do this because we love you guys so much.
Yeah. That is important. Showing them what healthy relationships look like and investing time in each other so that they know when they're in their relationships, you know, all those things are important because they're watching, you know, they are. So,
and it's part of creating that trust that we talked about earlier, right? It's like, I trust that you choose me and I choose you, that we're going to carve out this time for each other because we're important to each other.
Absolutely. I love that. I do. You talked about this a little bit. So I'm going to ask the question, and basically if there's anything you want to add to this one, if not, we'll move on. But you talk about creating a marriage you love without waiting for your spouse to change. What does that practically look like? And we talked a little bit about, you know, steps that you would give the individual partner when I'd asked the bonus question. But yeah, can you talk to that a little bit more?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like marriage is a dynamic. It takes two, right? And it's like a dance. And so, you know, there's what happens is very early on in our relationship, we create this dynamic, and usually it takes two people very implicitly creating. So, like, you know, name a struggle. So, like, let's say you have higher desire and lower desire spouse come in, and the higher desire partner is like, can you fix my lower desire partner? Or whatever that looks like. It's like, yeah, but I guarantee that it's both of you in a dynamic that's creating this, whether it's fighting all the time, whether it's withdrawing, whether it's, you know, sexual tension, whatever it is, it's two people complicit, right? And so you're dancing together. And when one person decides to change their steps, then, you know, the other person can't keep doing the same exact choreography. Otherwise, they're going to be stepping on each other's toes. It's going to be awkward. Like, they'll have to let go. So there's all kinds of things that happen when one person decides this is a priority. This is important to me. I'm going to learn these skill sets. I'm going to show up differently in the marriage. The other person will have to respond, whether good or bad. Right.
Right. Now, that's great. That's wonderful. Next question. What are the biggest myths about marriage that keep couples stuck or resentful?
Yeah. So this is so cool. I just got, like, this is the proof copy of the book. So I get to, like, look through it and hold it in my hand. It's so cool. There's 15 myths in here. And, you know, some of my favorites are these cliche really trite things that people say to newlyweds or, you know, newly engaged couples, which is like, learn how to compromise. I hate that one, right? Like, compromise is like, you give a little, I give a little, we meet in the middle, nobody gets exactly what they want. It's terrible advice. In the book, I teach couples how to collaborate. Collaborate looks very different from compromise. Compromise is kind of lazy, right? It's kind of like I don't really, you know, I want Mexican food, you want Italian food, like let's have Chinese, right? It's like, right. You're not really talking about anything. You're just kind of like, let's just do something that neither of us, you know, where neither of us really gets any of the things that are really important to us. Yeah. Collaboration takes more effort. It means that I think about what's really important to me and why, and then I can communicate that to my partner. And then I get really curious about my partner. What's really important to you about this and why? So we can do this on little things like where we eat dinner. We can do it for big things like where are we going to live? How are we going to educate our kids, right? I've helped couples do this in all realms, but not only are you going to talk about what's important to you and why, and that takes some time, but also what are my reservations about your position and what are your reservations about my position and how are we going to really address all of that? And what happens when you collaborate well is that it's not you meeting in the middle, it's you creating something better with two perspectives that you could have ever come up with on your own. And the thing I always tell people to remember about collaborating and making decisions together, whether they're big decisions or small decisions, we have so many resources now. Like we are not living in the same world that we lived in before. There are so many options for how to commute, for how to educate the kids, for how to, you know, do our jobs, for where to live and how to live and what to live in. I mean, if you were to talk about all the different housing options that we have now, like tiny houses, people live, you know, all over the country. They world school their kids. I mean, there are so many options now that were not available to generations past. So now with a little bit of research and a little bit of like talking about what's important to you, what's important to me, how can we really create something awesome? There's numberless options, but also nothing's permanent. Say you move your family to a different country and it's not working out, move them back. Like nothing is permanent. So, you know, I think couples stay really stuck in this idea that we need to compromise because that's what the older generation will always say. Like, if you want a good marriage, learn how to compromise.
Yeah.
And that I think really keeps couples stuck. There is a much, much better way.
I love that. So, all right, ladies, listen, it's collaboration, not compromise. I am learning as we are going through this interview. This is awesome.
And I would have never thought about many more, right? There's you here. Happy wife, happy life. Don't sweat the small stuff. Don't go to bed angry. Like all of these well-intentioned pieces of advice keep couples really stuck and miserable. It's very sad.
Yeah. You're right. So we got to get that book. I want to read all of that. So that's fascinating.
It's an easy read. It's meant for like very, you know, people that don't have a lot of time, but like, let's just do an inventory. Like, how are we doing here?
Yes. All right. We're all going to get that book. Okay. So how do you guide women who feel like they've lost themselves in their role as a wife or mother?
Yeah, this is so common. I actually think it's part of the process, right? Yeah. We as women, we're so loving and so nurturing and so attuned to the needs of others, which is necessary to keep our babies alive, right? Mm-hmm. But so many times, and this is a big one, we as women have compromised so much of ourselves in the process of, you know, becoming a wife, raising children, you know, there are parts of that are necessary, but also we've got to learn to tune into what we feel like is important and what we want to accomplish. And so what I work with couples so much on, well, a lot of times couples come to me, they've married 20, 30 years and their kids have moved out. So now the woman is facing this like, wait a second, who am I? Like, what am I supposed to do in the world? You know, like I haven't done all the things I came here to do, which is really important. And can that family now make room for that to happen? And so, you know, if you're talking about maintenance, like I love talking to newlyweds or people that are early in their marriage that like, we've got to make room in the family for everyone to fully develop all of their talents, skills, dreams, ambitions. And that means that like, yes, in a traditional family, the husband's gonna get his training and do his career, her job, or build his business or whatever that looks like. But they also need to make room for the wife to do the same, which means sharing a lot of the household and child-rearing responsibilities. That's something that looks a lot different now than in previous generations as well. Mm. But also let's make room for our kids, right? They want to be on the soccer team. Like, are we going to make space for traveling to soccer tournaments and getting them coaching and all of that stuff, right? Like creating a family environment where everybody gets to really develop the things that are important to them is so beautiful. And it's so possible now. Like I have a couple who I absolutely love. He wants to be a doctor and she wants to be a dentist. And why not? Like, I'm like, how are you going to make that work? And he's like, I'm going to work 3 days a week and she's going to work 2 days a week. Right? Why not?
Right.
We live in a world where that is so possible now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I love that. So what's one daily practice or mindset shift couples can start using today to reignite their connection?
Well, this isn't a short answer, but it's the best answer. And it really is learning how to make requests. So it's standing toe to toe with your partner. It's creating all of this that I'm talking about, but it's learning how to make requests. That means being willing to rock the boat, right? That means being willing to stand up to your partner. So like, I would put this under the umbrella of don't sweat the small stuff. Like I hate that phrase, don't sweat the small stuff. Cause like, just let it roll off your back. Just, it's fine. Like you don't need to like, but where do we think the big stuff comes from? Like after you've been married for 10, 15, 20 years, the resentment that is there because I didn't sweat any of the small stuff is huge and hugely destructive. But if I learn how to make requests really well, like, hey, listen, it would work better for me if you could put the toilet seat down after you go to the bathroom, right? That seems like a small thing, but in 20 years, it's like, I am walking around slamming things because I fell in the toilet a million times. Right. So, but learning how to rock the boat, learning how to make it very easy for your partner to win. So this is how we make requests. I teach, you know, I teach workshops on this, but like making your request in a way that it makes it so easy for your partner to win. So two things that are important about this is making your request very specific and time bound. So for example, you could make the request all day long. I need more help around the house. I need more help with the kids. Those are not specific, or we need to have more sex. Those are not specific requests. Like, how am I going to know when I actually came through for you with that? How am I going to know that I did that for you? Right. But a specific request looks like, hey, if you could manage the dishes and cleaning up the kitchen after dinner two nights a week for me, that way I could focus on getting the kids to bed. I could get some of the work done in my business. That would be hugely helpful. So if Tuesdays and Thursdays, you could be in charge of the dishes and cleaning up after dinner, I would love that. See how specific and time bound that is. And then when your partner does it on a Tuesday, hey, thank you so much for doing the dishes on Tuesday. That was so helpful. I got so much accomplished. Bedtime was so smooth. And then I got a couple hours of work in my office and we still got to spend time together. Thank you for doing that. Now on Thursday, he didn't do it. He didn't do the dishes. And you can be like, you know what? That was so helpful on Tuesday. What can we do to make it easier for you to actually get them done on Thursday as well? And the answer might be as simple as, you know what? I just totally forgot. Could you just send me a text and be like, hey, guess what? It's Thursday. It's your dish night.
Right.
Super helpful. Yeah. Right. And so like working these, negotiating these things in your family and in your household becomes super simple when you're willing to make requests, when you're willing to stand instead of just gritting your teeth and being like, oh, my husband never helps around the house. He's so lazy. Like I have to do all of it myself for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Just not productive.
Yeah, no, that's great. You know, and it sounds simple, but it's huge. It's huge. So another great gem. Thank you for that. Now, the majority of our audience, we focus on women in midlife, so women over 40. And one of our hot buttons has been, of course, perimenopause and menopause and the effects it has on not just your body, but, you know, your mental health sometimes, you know, your hormones are not balanced. So, you know, you're not balanced and it sometimes makes you show up is not your best self.
I love this topic, by the way.
Yeah. While you're trying to navigate that. And I think sometimes it leaves our spouses confused, maybe even sad, not understanding. So how do you help those couples?
So I talk a lot about this as part of the maintenance, like the oil changes, is really learning how to fill your cup. Get really tuned in to your own body, your own needs. So learning how to fill your cup and being able to ask your partner for support in this is a huge skill set that you can develop like over the lifespan of your marriage. And then when you hit perimenopause and menopause, like it comes in so handy because you've had some practice and you know what you're doing. But tuning into your body and being like, you know what? Nothing like specific is happening right in this moment, but I am so grumpy. Like, I just need a minute for myself and being able to, your spouse walks in the door from a busy day of work and saying, hey, welcome home. I love you so much. I am like really off tonight. Like I could really use half an hour to be able to go take a walk. Can you handle what's going on here for me for half an hour so I can go like pull it together, right? Being able to communicate and ask in that way is so helpful, right? But it requires a few things. One, you've got to be tuned into yourself. Instead of just yelling at your husband when he walks in, why are you so late? I've been here with the kids all day and I'm so frustrated and you're a jerk, right? Like, sometimes it may feel like that would make it better. Yeah. Instead being like, you know what? I'm just really off kilter. I need to take some time for myself. I need to ask my husband for support in this moment. That's going to work out better for you. Right. And so it's just learning, like, what is it that fills my cup? What is it that helps me center, bring back, you know, like maybe I just need to go to my room and read for 20 minutes. Maybe I need a hot bath. I have a friend who takes a bath every single night and they've just worked it out so that like, you know, they've worked out bedtime. They've worked out, they have older kids, but she just knows that in order to be able to relax and give some time and attention to her husband, she's got to be able to have a bath. And they've just worked it out. Like that fills her cup.
Yep.
So learn that about yourself. Experiment. If you're like, I am just not feeling good right now, what would make me feel better? Is it a cookie? Is it a bath? Is it a walk or 20 minutes, you know, listening to your favorite podcast? Like what's going to help you come back to center?
Yes.
And then just find a way to ask for help with that.
Oh, I love that. Okay. That was great. Yeah. So We've got some amazing gems, some great tips, and great insights from you. So thank you so much for that. And now I want to give the floor to you to talk about your exciting new book. And then, you know, where we can find you, your podcast, your website, all the things that you've got going on. So this is your time to plug away and talk about all the wonderful things that you have going on right now.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that so much. Well, I do a podcast episode every single week, Secrets of Happily Ever After. So I talk a lot about the things that are happening in my coaching sessions or questions that people are sending me. I try to stay really current with that. So that's an easy free resource that you can get lots of information about me. If you go to my website, which you have so beautifully put there, was my name, monicatanner.com. You can link out to ways to work with me, free resources, workshops that I'm doing, all of those types of things. And then the book, which is coming out very soon, but probably this will come out before the book does. You can get on the waiting list at badmarriageadvice.com. And when you do that, you'll get 300 date night ideas in every price range and for every season. So a lot of times couples will just be like, we're just not creative. We don't know. That's 6 years. If you're going on a date once a week, that's 6 years of date nights. So definitely worth just putting in your email there to get on the wait list for the book and all kinds of bonuses there for you.
That's amazing. And when does the book officially drop?
September 30th.
September 30th. Okay. All right. Awesome. So ladies, I will have that information pinned in the comments. So, and if you're listening on the audio podcast, all of that will be in the show notes. So I'll have all that for you. Monica, thank you so much. This has been an amazing interview with so many wonderful things that we can apply. Those of us that are married and, you know, have hit a snag or, you know, we're in the maintenance phase and don't want to hit a snag. So you've really touched on so many important things. So thank you so much. My pleasure. We look forward to the book and getting on that list. And so I'll have all that for the ladies. Anything you want to say before we close, like parting words?
I just want to say, you know, it's all very normal and you're probably right where you need to be. So don't beat yourself up. Like when you know better, you do better, and don't try to do it all at once. Just pick a couple of things that you heard today that you might be like, oh, you know, this, a lot of people start with date night, right? They're like, oh, we're not very good at date night. You will notice a huge difference if you make that a priority. And even if you have to be the one to do it, right? Like your husband is not going to book the babysitter in the restaurant and all the things, right? Even if you do it, like, it's okay. Like just start somewhere and like little baby steps at a time, you'll start to notice huge differences.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, ladies. Again, thank you for tuning in. If you haven't yet, please go ahead and subscribe. Give us the thumbs up on this video and leave us a comment. What did you find most helpful in this interview? And what are you most looking forward to in connecting with Monica and reading the book? So let us know in the comments. Those that listen on audio podcasts, leave us a review and please make sure you follow us. And again, always thank you, ladies. And remember, continue to feed your health, continue to walk in your wealth and build your empowerment. Thank you so, so much again, Monica and ladies. Have a great day.